Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Dr. Peter Fox. He is a chiropractor who has made the exploration of ancient ways, primitive skills, and healing methods a main focus in his life. He has written several books, including 24 Runes to Live By, The Transformation Path, which describes the runes as a path for living a complete and successful life. Peter, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing amazing. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting show. We're going to be discussing your book, 24 Runes to Live By. This is a topic that it's going to be a first for my show. I really don't know much about runes. Very interested to learn more. Let's start with a little bit more about you first. Tell us about your background and then what brought you to looking into runes.
Yeah, runes is it's a bit of a diversion from my overall background. I've been a chiropractor for the last 11 years. I got interested in chiropractic largely due to personal history with it. I had a bunch of issues with athletic injuries, things like that in high school. And so that kind of got me started on the natural health path. So I went to see a chiropractor. And it kind of introduced me to that whole philosophy, the idea that the body's the health, self-healing organism, and that there can be interference to the body's ability to heal itself, which is, it's quite a bit different from the Western mechanistic point of view in terms of how the body heals. So that kind of started me off on this path of exploring and got me interested into the different ways that humans have developed healing systems in different types of cultures around the world. So how the mythology of one culture in Asia or the mythology of a culture in Africa would create a different type of healing system in the way that different civilization types, like a tribal hunter-gatherer culture or an agriculturalist society, an industrial society, each of those would make a different type of healing art. And so I wrote some on that. I try to integrate as much into my own personal healing practice from those different types of traditions around the world as possible when appropriate. And, in exploring those different aspects of history and culture, invariably you find yourself drawn into a path of wanting to experience things. So I became involved in the rewilding community, which is very loosely organized, but essentially it involved experientially exploring what it would be like to be a primitive hunter-gatherer. So I've gone out on lakes with canoes and harvested wild rice. I've done those sorts of things. I've gathered different types of natural medicinal herbs, mushrooms, made tinctures from those things, worked on finding different alternate food sources that are actually staple foods. So harvesting like 50 pounds of acorns one year and processing them all out into flour and using that in the winter, different things like that. And through that, you start to look at the religions and things like that of your ancestral past. And my heritage is largely European, like 99%. And when I look back through the history of Europeans, there were the runes. There was this ancient knowledge, and one day, and I kind of ignored them. They're a little bit terrifying to me. And there was this day I was in a yurt with a friend of mine. She was doing the same thing, this experiential kind of learning. And I was having some issues with a girl. And so like most people, when they start getting into divination, they do it for very personal reasons. And I just kind of wanted to know. I mean, I knew what the situation with this person was all about, but I didn't want to admit it to myself. And so she brought out the runes, and they very, very clearly and very, very harshly told me everything that I sort of already knew about the situation, but they did it in such an exact way that it terrified me, and I avoided them for the next year. But then for some reason, I up and got him with me. I made my own rune set, and they just started talking, and that's sort of where things began.
Very interesting. Now, Tell us a little bit about the background of runes. What exactly are they? Where do they come from? Where do they originate from?
So that's a great question. And I'm gonna preface my answer with this by saying that from the original sources about the runes, we have very little knowledge about them. The historical legend about the runes is that the god Odin sacrificed himself to himself on a tree and reached down to the base of the world tree and picked up the runes and brought them back to the Germanic Norse peoples in Northern Europe. The name rune means mystery. So the runes are mysteries. There's 24 of them. The origins of them as written symbols is around the time of the Romans. So the actual symbols for the runes are probably a combination of Greek and Latin in terms of the actual script. They're obviously modified from those languages because we don't have letters within those languages that look exactly like the runes, but they're very similar in the way that they're shaped. But I believe that the runes are actually much older than that, and that the runes go back to the end of the Ice Age, when the European hunter-gatherers were needing to, through oral tradition, pass on wisdom through the generations. And when you look at the order of the runes and some of the things, the symbols in them and what they represent, it makes me think that this was actually a path that was set about, that was passed down through oral history, and that when the Europeans applied these Latin symbols to them, that was what brought them into use for things like an alphabet, et cetera, and things like that. But I believe that the original use of the runes was, in addition to things like divination, was a teaching tool for teaching people about how to live better and fuller lives.
Now, when you say divination, can you explain more about what that is?
I can. So divination, there's a lot of different ways that people can do divination, but essentially divination is trying to gain additional information or knowledge in regards to a situation. In some instances, you could try to like predict the future using divination. You could try to gain knowledge about the current present. You could try to gain insights about the past and how it's relevant to the now or the future. But essentially, it's trying to gain access to wisdom that is outside of the what is apparent. How divination actually works, I don't know if anybody actually knows, but it seems that there's this ability for us to grab information from sources outside of what we see, apparently, like written book knowledge, you know, things, news stories. There's additional information that's available, and that we can have access to that through magical tools like either the runes or the tarot deck, things like that.
Now, how would we use runes in, modern day times? What are some of the uses that we could use them for today?
Gotcha. So there's a lot of different ways that people could use the runes today. People do use them for divination. So someone might take the runes and cast them and look at the patterns that come out with it. Or you might do a series of three. You might draw three of the 24 runes at random, and then however they fall, you might interpret them differently. So maybe the first rune is the rune Fehu, which is the rune that symbolizes cattle and wealth, things like that nature. And then the second one maybe is one that that symbolizes need. And then the third one is maybe one that symbolizes joy. And you would have to interpret that relative to your current situation and the question that you asked of the runes. One of the other ways that you could use the runes is my preferred way of using them, which is to look at them in the order that they're placed in and look at the organization of the structure and use that to try and achieve more in my life. So the way that the runes are set up, there's 24 of them. They're divided into three sets of eight. So the first set of eight runes, the way that I interpret it is that these runes are related to success in the physical realm in an individual and family level. So I'm going to go through the runes with you here because I think this
I was going to actually ask you to do that, to kind of show us what, you know, the symbols are on them and yeah. Explain each one.
So, So this here, I know there's a glare on it. That might be a little bit better there. But these are the runes. These are the symbols. This is how I have them. And they're in order, and I have them divided out in a particular way. And so I'll just go through the order of the first eight. The first one is called Fehu, that rune. And I'm going to probably mispronounce these. There's different ways that you can pronounce them. They're, you know, ancient Norse. But Fehu is associated with domesticated cattle, and it is related to wealth, resources, money, more like fluid currency. And then the rune following that is called Urus, which represents the ancient Auroch, which was it's like a wild bull. They don't exist anymore. I think the last one died sometime in the 1600s. But they were like an undomesticated, like megafauna from like Stone Age days that survived up until that time. It's related to vigor, to strength, to personal health. And then the rune after that is called Thurishas, and it's related to the giants in Norse mythology. So the giants in Norse mythology, Thor is part giant. And I believe this rune's related to electricity, to fertility, to protection. There's a lot of different meanings that you can put onto these runes. The one after that is called Anshus, and that one's related to the knowledge of the ancestors. The rune after that is called Rido. And Rido is one of the first of what I call a transitional rune, because you have these first four, and they're all about you making sure that you've got the finances that you need to support your life, having health, having vigor, having the ability to protect yourself and of the ancestors. And then comes this rune called Rido, which is the rune for travel or for journey. And following that, you have the rune for the torch, which I relate to knowledge, the rune Gibo, which relates to exchange, and the rune Wunjo, which it relates to joy. So the way that I see these last three runes is that once you go on this personal journey, you have this you decide what you're going to do with these, with this wealth, with this power, with this ancestral knowledge that you have. You're going to do something with it. You're going to apply your personal knowledge, your flame of creativity to it. And then you're going to take that creative thing that you've done, and you're going to exchange it with the world around you. And if you do that in fair exchange, you're going to have a life of joy, which is the end of that first eight rounds. End of the first eight runes in the first round. So that rune's all about, to me, about personal success, that first round. Then the second round, to me, this round is about becoming a leader in your community. And in order to become a leader in a community, first you have to experience challenge in your personal life. You have to go through some stuff before you have the ability to help others through their things. So the first rune in that set is called Hagalaz, which stands for hail or the hailstorm. That represents challenge. And then the rune after that is Nothis, or need or nothing. It represents the void. So after you have things taken away from you, there's a void of emptiness where all new things can come out from that. The rune after that is Isa, which stands for ice, where you crystallize your new identity. You come out from this void, you crystallize your new identity. Then the rune after that is about the annual cycles of energy, and it's called Gera. So from there, you plan out how you're going to use this crystallized you and apply it with the harmony, in harmony with nature. Then the rune after that is the center of it all. And this rune is called Iwas. And this rune represents the world tree. It's the tree that Odin hung himself on to sacrifice himself to gain the knowledge of the runes in the first place. So this is the rune of personal sacrifice. So you sacrifice yourself to benefit the community and all, and you come out the other side of that. The rune after that is the rune for luck or fate. And you take your fate in your hands. The rune after that is for the elk, for protection, for leadership. So you gain that sense of leadership. The rune after that is Sawilla, which is the rune for the sun. And that's another rune of becoming a champion. Is all this making sense to you?
Yes, yes, yes. Very much. Very interesting. Now, would you say it's sort of similar to tarot, but a more ancient tools for guidance, I guess?
I don't know about the history of tarot or how old it is, so I don't really want to speak to that. But I mean, these symbols in terms of their writing go back to the beginning of the first century, you know, in the times of the Romans, when the Romans and the Teutons and such were fighting. So at that time, you know, it was during the Roman Empire. So a long time ago. But in terms of the symbols themselves, there's some things actually in the last eight that give us a clue that these related to shamanic hunter-gatherer cultures that were long before that. The Sami, who were sort of like the indigenous people of Northern Europe, or even Ice Age peoples who existed even before that, because there's some relationship even to the Siberian shamans in this last round of eight. So in that round, it starts off with a rune called Tivas, which represents the North Star, but is also, the name is the same root that the word Jupiter comes from, the god Jupiter. The word Deus, which is Latin for God, it's sort of like the father divine aspect, the divine masculine in a sense, you could say almost. But essentially, it's like it represents the North Star, that sky father guidance. The rune after that is Birktanas, which stands for the birch tree. And there's some interesting things about the birch tree that I learned about in the rewilding community, because what the birch does is after the glaciers come through, it's one of the first trees that will emerge, and it's full of medicine. You can use all different parts of the birch for either food or for healing. But one of the other aspects of the birch is that it can be related to the shamanic rites of the Siberians. So the shaman would actually, he would climb the birch tree to get to the North Star. And there's also Odin had a horse called Sleipnir, and the rune after Birktanas is the rune Ewas, which stands for the horse. So there's this shamanic animal that is the third rune within the set. The rune after that is the rune Manas, which stands for man or for mind. So the way that I interpret these is that you have this shamanic initiatory rite. At the end of your journey on the horse, you have to reconsolidate your mind and bring it back so that you can emerge from the cosmos back into yourself and bring it into the world. Then there's another transition rune called Lagus, which I translate as being related to the divine feminine, because this rune is the rune for water. So you make it through this trial by water, and you emerge back from that on the other side. The next rune is the rune for sacred masculine fire, followed by the runes for the different aspects of time and the way that time flows differently. So there's a rune Dagas, which I interpret as the rune for syntropic time, which it relates to some Greek terms. There's this idea that time moves in multiple directions, and that you can bring order from the future, that there's this future attractor point, and it draws things forward an official aspect of time that pulls us forward, is how I interpret that Dagas. And then the next is the rune for Othala, or the ancestral house, and I interpret that rune as what is known in Greek as supercausal time, where the past, present, and future all coexist at once. So it's the completion of the entire journey. So we have a set of runes that's for your personal success, a set of runes that's for your success and leadership within community, and then a set of runes that's for your success within the shamanic spiritual realm.
Now, as far as you personally, have you used runes for guidance as a tool in your life?
I really try to avoid it in the sense of using them for divination, but what I tend to find is that people talk about the runes. People who are experts in them will say that the runes are living things, and that when you craft a set of runes, that they have a living essence about them, and that's 100% been my experience with them. So, like, I've got my runes here with me, and almost always when I move my runes from one place to the next, I'll think that I've moved them all. And then next thing I know, I'm looking down on the ground and there's a rune sitting up. It's like they jump out at you literally. I've had this happen multiple times where a couple of years ago, I was in a situation where I needed to move to a different state and I was trying to decide on what to do. And so I moved my rooms from one spot to another, went back into the room, and the room for Homeland was sitting on the floor. So, I mean, that guided my decision to move back to Detroit, which was where I was born. So, so yes.
It sounds like you're very cautious of the runes. Would you say that there's any danger in them?
The danger that you bring to it, the amount of order and coherence and resilience, discipline, temperance that you have in your own personal life, you can carry that into your use with the runes, and it makes them completely safe for you. The degree of chaos that you have in your own internal life and your lack of discipline, etc. When you play with primeval forces, then you need the discipline to work with them with the respect that they deserve. So
I'm still trying to understand, like, today, if a person would want to use runes, what would they be using it for? What are some of the practical uses that someone, you know, would want to use runes, you know, in their daily life?
Gotcha. So, I mean, in terms of the rune path, one way that you could do that is if, say, for instance, you want to be a leader in your community. It's really tempting to try and, like, just force it to happen, right? To just be like, I'm gonna be this person. I'm gonna stand up and say the thing. But you're not necessarily gonna carry the respect that is gonna allow you to become an effective leader in the community unless you go through the things that are required for you to reach that place. And so the runes set out a path for you to do that. You know, they let you know that, hey, before you become a leader in a community, first your own life, your own house has to be in order. Once that's in order, you know, then you have to understand the challenges that the people you're attempting to help assist have gone through so that you can carry them through that same place because you've experienced and been there. So you can look at the way that the runes are structured and you can say, like, okay, I want to be at this point in my life. I want to be a leader, or I want to be a shamanic healer. And it gives you a path to get there in a way that's going to be safe and healthy for you. Because you can also go through these things in the reverse. That was my experience in terms of becoming a healer, is that I had a sort of a healing crisis, and I ended up going through that whole shamanic realm before getting back to the original part of the rune and getting, like, my financial house in order, getting my physical health in order, really looking around me and seeing what's the wisdom that I have available to me. It was sort of more of a experience of, this is raw primal supernatural power, and good luck, as opposed to this other possibility where you could come to it in its proper time and place and interact with it in a way that allows you to be more effective. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you for that. Now, something interesting that I want to talk about, something you sent me in the email, is that the Thule Society and Hitler utilized runes quite often. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is one of the interesting things about runes is when you look into the original rune lore, there's not a lot of it. There's, like, maybe a couple of pages of written history on the runes. But when you add into that things that were basically like pagan reconstructionism, where you had people such as Guido von List, who he wanted to bring back paganism into Germany. And so what he did was he looked at the runes and he developed his own rune lore. So he went through and he did his own shamanic process where the runes gave him knowledge and information. However it came about it, he wrote rune lore not based upon the original text of the runes. It came to him. It was divinely inspired, you could say, his lore for the runes. And as a result of that, he was very effective in spreading this around in Germany. And it was a very romantic period in history. There was a lot of spiritualist tradition happening all around the world. In the United States, you had it because of the Civil War. People were very big into spiritualism and to seances. Europe had just gone through World War I. So people were very much into healing this collective trauma that everybody experienced from both the Civil War and from the First World War. And the Order of Thule, they adopted a lot of this Germanic symbolism. And through that order, there was the German Workers' Party emerged, and Hitler became a member of that. And because that was the symbolism of those groups, that was what Hitler adopted. And it was very much about the supernatural power that was available within the runes. So he wanted to harness that. He wanted to carry forth that ancestral legacy and use that to the benefit of the German people. So yeah, it's kind of it's a little bit of an unfortunate thing, because it also tends to mean that today a lot of those rune symbols are associated with Nazis, neo-Nazis to a certain degree. So,
well, I mean, there's so much that goes back to that time period, what they were doing with the, not only that, but the occult and, you know, channeling of entities to, you know, supposedly reverse engineer craft. There's so much that goes into the stories, but you know, adding runes to it adds a whole another level. You know, I'm just wondering how they may have, you know, been utilizing runes you know, in some of their practices.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the secret stuff that they did. I know that they're on the surface symbolism all involved in it. And it didn't seem like it was done haphazardly. It seemed like they had a structure for it. They had the way that they used the runes made sense in terms of what they were trying to do with it. You know, these things, they're like any other sort of archetype. The more that they're put in use by human beings, the more powerful and charged they are. And if these runes are as old as I think they are, they really do go back to the Ice Age. That's a tremendous amount of power and use that they have developed archetypally. And I mean, that must have been a huge source of power for that country to be placing those in use. And it's unfortunate that they used them the way that they did to do what they did.
Now, where did you get your rune set? Now, you know, you were saying that they hold some supernatural power. Do you have to have runes that originate from, you know, a certain place, or you know, where did you get your runes? And then, you know, where should people get their runes if they're interested in this?
So, I mean, you can get runes a lot of different places. I mean, there's a lot of people who are making them and selling them on Etsy. There's some Instagram makers who are making really beautiful rune sets. I made my own personally. I crafted mine. I used a particular type of wood. I used the wood from the yew tree, which is the tree that I believe was the Yggdrasil in the Norse mythology. And I made them myself. I carved the blanks out. I drew the designs in. I burned them in with a wood burner, and you know, it was all done very intentionally. I was very careful about my frame of mind when I made them. You know, I mean, they're a ritual tool. The amount of energy that you put into them is going to benefit the process of you working with them. You can buy a set from someone if you don't want to make your own, but I mean, I would recommend to everyone make your own runes.
Do you think it's the symbols that give it the power, or the intention when you make it, or a combination of both?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, one of my other interests is chaos magic. So my cousin's a chaos magic practitioner. My brother does a little bit of it. And I don't do too much of it, but I'm knowledgeable enough about certain aspects of chaos magic that I really enjoy. And some of that is just about using self-exploration, because essentially magic is a tool to create change in accordance with will. And you change yourself so that the world around you functions better for you. And when you have a symbol like a rune, and you meditate on it, you're taking in a bit of that archetypal consciousness into yourself, and it changes you. So anything that you can do to potentiate that change inside of yourself is going to make the rune more powerful. Having that rune been in use throughout history by thousands to hundreds of thousands to maybe millions of people over the course of human history just makes it that much more potent of a symbol. So, and that's, you know, one of the other great things about runes is if you want to have a, create a change in yourself, if you want to embody more health, you can do a meditation on the rune Urus for the Orak, this, you know, beast with tremendous vitality. And you can attempt to embody what that energy is. And that can help you to perhaps make better health choices in your life because it becomes an aspect of who you are. You're not seeing yourself as a sick person. You're seeing yourself as embodying this vitality of an ancient bull. And
that brings me to my next question about maybe some possible health benefits. I mean, you're a chiropractor and obviously interested in some of the benefits of these alternative health methods. What could be some of the benefits of using runes that could be for your health?
Well, one great thing about runes is that you can use the runes to create a sense of autonomy and control about those aspects of your life that you have the ability to control. The runes are, you can meditate upon a rune to take upon the consciousness of that rune, the vibration of that rune, and embody that. And that gives you a sense of control about an internal aspect of yourself. And the more we feel in control of the world around us, the less stress we experience. There's a lot of different things that make us experience more stressful. Number one, you don't know how long it's going to last. Number two, you don't have any control over the situation. Number three, you think it's inescapable. All those different things make life worse. So by you having the runes as a tool, it provides you with an additional resource. So your internal state becomes stronger. You see yourself as having the ability to create a change, which gives you that sense of autonomy. You have the ability to make an effect upon the world because you're focusing. The runes provide you a tool to focus.
And I'm wondering why, if they do have these benefits, why you aren't still using the runes? Is there been a negative experience, or is it just that you're still, trying to find more benefits of it? What's the reason?
So actually, I mean, when I say that I don't use the runes, I don't use the runes for divination. I focus on the runes very, very, very often. I would say every day at some point during the day, I have a thought coming to my mind about a particular rune, where that rune sits within those three tiers, whether it's in the realm of personal success or the realm of leadership or the realm of shamanism. So depending upon which of those three realms I kind of want my day to take a tone of, I might start the day out and I might think to myself, I'm feeling kind of down. Let's focus on health. I'm going to meditate on Urus today. Or maybe I need some cash, so I'm going to meditate on Fehu. Or maybe I'm feeling like I need some divine leadership, so I'm going to meditate on Tibas. Maybe I've been really full of myself lately and I need to do a little bit of sacrifice. I'm going to focus on Iwas and it's not going to be about me today. So that's how I use the runes as a daily practice. Divination. I don't have the self-discipline to feel I can safely perform divination on a consistent basis without bringing chaos into my life.
Now, if someone wanted to get started using runes, where could they find the best information, if they wanted to use them in their everyday life?
So I have a book available on a website called Gumroad. The book is called 24 Runes to Live By. It's, I think it's $5.99 or something like that on there. It's downloadable. It's an ebook. And that goes through and it talks about all these different levels of the runes. But the other thing that it does is it talks about each of these levels of the rooms as it relates to the hero's journey. And I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the hero's journey, but it's the classic archetype that all stories unfold by. So Star Wars in particular is a great one. Essentially, it starts out in the normal world. Everything's kind of like boring and the same. And all of a sudden, a problem pops up. And you're not quite sure what to do. And then someone comes to assist you and guide you. That person takes you into a special world. You go on a quest. You go on a journey. You come across some insurmountable challenge like a dragon. You slay the dragon. And then you come back to the ordinary world and you attempt to reintegrate into the normal world with things. You know, you're changed, but the place that you were at before is now different as a result of that. The runes work that way. They follow that same storytelling arc. So the book goes through all the runes. It gives you some information about the runes historically. It gives a little bit of information about how the runes were used, you know, by Hitler, etc. But then it also goes through how we can use the runes to sort of play out that role of the hero in our own lives and follow that rune path to achieve success through those three realms of personal, of leadership, and of shamanism and healing.
Now, before we move on, is there anything else that we should know, you know, anything important you think we should know about runes before we move on to the next question I have?
I would say the most important thing to know about runes is that these are ancient symbols and that I do recommend working with them, but I also recommend really being serious about it and coming at it with some gravity.
Very good. Now, I wanted to close out by having you tell us a little bit more about some of your books. They look very interesting. Just if you could just go through each one and tell us a little bit about it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the shortest book that I have is called The Thermodynamic Subluxation. And that book, I wrote primarily for chiropractors, but I actually have a number of people who are interested in things like permaculture that do find the book very enjoyable. But what that book does is it goes through it looks at how ecology, biophysics, how these different subjects relate to human health and well-being. So it's essentially about how energy flows through human beings the same way that it flows through ecosystems. And this ends up relating to the way that we move through the world, to our posture, to how much energy we have, you know, all those different types of things. For most people, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that book. For most people, the book that I would recommend in addition to the Rune book would be Operating System Nature, The Birth of the Tradition. And what that book does is that book looks at human healing, how it's been developed throughout different types of culture. So I look at tribal hunter-gatherer culture. I look at, through that lens, I look at Maori healing in New Zealand. And I look at the mythology of the Maori and how that relates to how their healing system develops. Then I do the same thing for yoga. I look at how the traditions of the Vedas, et cetera, related to the way that Indians developed yoga and yoga philosophy. And then I do the same thing with chiropractic and how chiropractic sort of emerged out of, essentially out of the occult in the 1800s and early 1900s. It came out of, I mean, a lot of people probably don't know this, but one of the first chiropractors after the founders was a guy named Israel Regardi, who was part of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. He was the secretary to Aleister Crowley, and he became a chiropractor because the philosophy of chiropractic aligned with the way that he saw the world. It's one of those kind of strange random facts. The person who developed chiropractic, he came up with chiropractic after being in a seance, and a doctor who died 15 years earlier named Jim Atkinson told him about chiropractic and said, you need to bring this into the world. I tried when I was alive, but the world wasn't ready for it. It's ready for it now. You need to make it happen. And so that's what he did. And because of that, there is a vitalistic, almost supernatural sort of bent to the way that the philosophy of chiropractic developed. And so I look at that mythology as the one that brought chiropractic into being. And then I go from myth, and then I look at the science of it. I look at what does the current research say about all these different topics. Like, for instance, yoga. How does yoga change our heart rate variability? How does it help us to regulate our autonomic nervous system? For the Maori, I look at the way in Maori culture, some of their issues would have related to post-traumatic stress disorder more so than disorders of nutrition, et cetera, because they were a warring culture. They would have dealt with PTSD the same way that we do. And the types of therapy that they did actually mimic some of the ways that we work with PTSD today in modern therapy. So different, but similar. And then in terms of chiropractic, I look at the way chiropractic relates to the function of the brain and the autonomic nervous system and helping to balance things out in that regard. And then I go into some interesting stuff about how that has social implications through things like coherence, things like flock behavior, you know, that sort of connection between things. So it covers a really big variety of topics, but I think it's a fascinating book.
Very good. And if people wanted to find your work and your books, let them know where they can find it.
All right. So I've got a website, thewildchiro.com. There's a section about the chiropractic books on there. If you want to find the Room book, hop onto Google, or if you have show notes here, I think I've got you the link for the Gumroad link to it. Otherwise, you could just Google Gumroad 24 Runes to Live By and it'll pop up.
Very good. Peter, thank you so much for coming by tonight. That was fascinating stuff, and you have an excellent night.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.